We're going to look at the journey to faith, and I just think a little bit more about that time span thing. I think I found it extremely helpful to begin to realize that it's a long game. I was talking to a church official at a theological college just a month ago. And in one sense, having been in one church, I mean, we've lived in Bedford. My wife moved in 1978. We got married in 1980. And I became part of the church leadership in 1982. So it's one church a long time. One of the benefits of that is you realize you're in the long game. And he said, please tell young guys they're in the long game. Because if we judge by, you know, I talked to this person about Jesus, they weren't interested, We will feel very defeated before we're even 30. In fact, I know many people of my age, because they felt defeated then, haven't really talked about Jesus the rest of their life, and have no expectation that anybody of their age is ever going to become a Christian. And we feel as if, you know, if people don't become a Christian before they're 20, that's it, they're never going to become a Christian afterwards. A lot of us can feel like that. And sometimes, you know, you hear somebody statistically say, you know, 95% of all the people in the world that become Christians become a Christian before they leave school. Or I went to a student conference and the man said, being a student is a person's last best opportunity for becoming a Christian. I like, hold on, get my head around that. He says, their last best opportunity for becoming a Christian. It almost like wipes out most of us for the rest of our lives, doesn't it? You're kind of like, what? And I feel, I meet many, many Christians, 35 and onwards, who just fail. Well, I'll cheer on the young people as they run the camp, but I don't think anybody I know is ever going to become a Christian. But when I came across Dave Bennett's research, and also then looking at how many people have become Christians in our own church over the last few years, I realize that actually it's a long game. Five of our close friends have become Christians. Say close friends. My wife's close friend. She's just really good at this, and I just pray like mad, I guess. But I could, if you came to our church, and I could point them out and say that one became a Christian from meeting her at the school gate to her becoming a Christian was about 10 years. This guy here, I met. He met us through school, and then his kids came to a kids club. And he began to fix my car. I had a Fiat. You know what a Fiat is? Fix it again, Tony. Yeah. So he would fix my car. And I've, you know, it's an aging car. He's done 100 and we sold it when he got 180,000 on the clock. You know, so he's always fixing my car. He would just fix my car. Now, it wasn't like leaving it at a garage, come back later, Mr. Evans, and they charge you 500 quid. This is like, I'll fix it while you're here, Ray, and, you know, you call it 75 between it, that kind of stuff. So he's fixing the car. We would just meet every 3-6 months, however, you know, whatever the gap was. And we would just talk. And after about 5 years of fixing my car, knowing his kids at school, fixing my car, one day he said to me, can I talk to you about something? I don't know who to talk to about it. I said, yeah. He said, you see that bloke that's just gone into my house? I said, yeah. He said, that's my wife's lover. He said, I just don't know what to do about it. She's having affairs, multiple affairs. I am absolutely out of my head. I don't know who to turn to. I'm turning to you. Can you say anything? Poof, that was a jailer moment, wasn't it? You see, I had no idea. It was a jailer moment. And we began a conversation. Sadly, his marriage broke up. And he was with his kids and he said, look, well, how do I look after three kids? I've got them for the weekend. Am I allowed to bring them to church? Because that'll kill a couple of hours. Yeah, of course you can. So we'd bring them on to church and he began to listen. And 9 months later, did a course. I can see him now in my front room and saying, are you telling me that basically Jesus did it on the cross? He just died for our sins on the cross. I said, yeah, that's how it is. I said, yeah, I believe that. I believe that. But that journey was about 10 or 12 years. Two of our friends, the journey has been over 20 years. And I know it because one of them, Jenny and Kathy met when Jenny had a bump called Christopher, our first baby. And Kathy had twin girls, big bump. And they met at antenatal. And Kathy eventually cannot believe how contorted the journey was. It was unbelievably like she'd come to church, we wouldn't see her. I don't want to know, no, don't ask me. 5 years between sometimes coming to something and the next thing. But after 21 years, I knew how exactly, because Chris was now 22, because it was after 20. So it's like she got baptized. And our most recent friend, Kate, she was a teacher at our kids' lower schools. And I tell you, my eldest is now 35. She's at lower school. Her husband died very suddenly about 18 months ago. She just happened to bump into Jenny at something. And she said, oh, Jenny, I'm absolutely devastated. The love of my life has gone. I don't know what to do with myself. And Jenny said, well, Kate, why don't you come out for lunch? And got to lunch. And a year and a half later, Kate became a Christian. But they're huge journeys, aren't they? Now, rather than that go, you lot in Bedford must be useless if it takes that long. No, it's rather say, hang on in there with the people you know. Don't give up on them. Don't think, because they didn't become a Christian in the first 5 years, they won't become a Christian. Because most people's journey to faith, from meeting a Christian to becoming a Christian, is probably going to be around 10 or more years. And because we don't know that, we tend to give up. We tend to think, well, Dave Bennett came across a lady. She got invited 14 years on the trot to a carol service and she said no. And on the 15th year, she said yes. And 3 months later, she became a Christian. How many times would you ask the same person? I mean, I'd give them maybe two maximum. Can you come to carol service? No. Can you come to carol service? No, that's it. I'm never going to ask you again then. Because you're obviously, you're not ever going to get saved. You're not, whatever your theology is, you're obviously not elect if you say no to carol service invites. You're out. But you see, this woman persevered. And now you're going to meet her one day in heaven. And I found that so reassuring. So reassuring. I don't give up on my friends. Don't give up praying for people. Don't give up when people seem to sort of be distant for a while. Even the people who are now Christians, you wouldn't believe the contorted journeys. And when I heard Dave Bennett explain, and when I seen it with my own eyes, and now what happens in our church, people know these journeys, and so they go, right, we've seen this girl called Faith, Kate, she's 63, 64, and the journey from first meeting a Christian to becoming a Christian has been over 20 years. And she's in her mid-60s. Now, she's muddled because there's a lot to unlearn. But she's clear on the main thing. She knows Jesus died for her sins on the cross and has brought her peace and hope. And she's now telling her kids. And they think she's really weird. But she's met us and go, oh, you're not so weird, Mum. Your friends are okay. These Christian friends you've got, they're all okay. So you can't be that weird, Mum. And it's brought you some hope and peace. Who knows whether her children might come to faith through the testimony of her 60-something-year-old mother. Isn't that how the gospel spreads? And I found that such a... Because I'm not a salesman, but it feels as if I should be, How are the sales figures doing from Planet Earth, the Bedford branch these days? Like, they're not very good, Lord. Don't ask too many questions, you see? Now, we're not salesmen. But we are easily driven by results, aren't we? We are easily, look at us. It's just so foolish, isn't it? But you do want to see people saved, don't you? We do want to win as many as we can, the Apostle Paul said. And I found it reassuring. I also came across a couple of, models. In one sense, it's a trajectory that people are on sometimes. You might meet somebody at the beginning of that journey, and they are like, hey man, I'm into spirituality. Like, I really like Buddha. I haven't read anything, but I think I might like Buddha. And you go, oh no, what's the point? What is the point of talking to somebody like that? And yet, the very fact that they're willing to tell you that, tell me more. How come you become a bit more interested in something that you can't see? Well, I've earned so much money, I realize that money's just doesn't do it for me. You think, wow, there's something deep going on here. That people aren't like that normally, are they? To begin to explore Buddhism because you're fed up with materialism, That's a gospel opening. Now, that might begin a conversation. See, it's a trajectory somebody's on. Christians in sport use this image. They talk about the journey from the back of the stands. You know, I don't want anybody to know I'm interested. Nicodemus coming to see Jesus at night. Back of the stand stuff, isn't it? We want people here, don't we? Playing on, that's where we want people to be. And we think the people that are going to come onto the pitch are these people here. And they're the ones that Christians are only interested in. You know, do you love and know the Lord Jesus, or would you like to know him today? That's the kind of people around here, aren't we? But you see, they say, no, we've got it. The journey starts way back here. I'm a bit embarrassed. I don't know anything. I became a Christian. I never went to church before I became a Christian. I had a friend at school who taught me about Jesus, gave me a book to read. I became a Christian to read a book. But if you'd said to me, would you like to come to church? That would have been a step too far for me. I'm a back of the stand person. And they say, what we need to do is gradually move them to the front of the stands and then gradually onto the pitch. Or this one, this is Christian Vision for Men. Again, I found it very helpful. If you're at an airport, you tend to sort of watch the planes landing, but the process starts, actually it starts way out there, doesn't it, over the horizon. I don't know about you, I am very dangerous driving on the M25 around Heathrow, especially at night, because I tend to look to the right to see the planes stack up and see how many lights can I count. I got to four. You can see four planes at once on the approach to Heathrow. They start, you see them go that way, don't you? But if you go around the M25, you can look along, you think, oh, look at that flight bar. Or sometimes when the wind's in the other direction, you look out over Windsor, you can see four planes. Now, the journey to land does not start in the last quarter of a mile, does it? They're being talked in from over the horizon. And many people's journey to faith is like that. They start with knowing you at work or knowing you as a neighbor. They're not about to land as a Christian. You know, give me a good book to read, one of Tim Keller's heavy ones. You know, they don't say that, do they? No, they are, oh, you're a Christian. I don't know what that means. You're a bit religious, but you're a nice person. But don't shove it down my throat. That's where they start. They're miles away. And what we've tried to do is encourage Christians in the church to not give up on people over. If you want them to land here, the journey starts 25 miles away with an aeroplane. It does with people. So rub shoulders with non-Christians. Don't write them off. Just pray for them. You actually know tons of non-Christians. In fact, can you get rid of the word friendship evangelism? Just get rid of that word. Because we tend to think of friends, oh, I've known them for so long, and we're really, really cozy friends. And how many friends you got like that? You know, hopefully your husband or your wife, but that's about it, isn't it? You know, you haven't got tons and tons of close friends. Just think of the word acquaintanceships. So at carol service time, you can ask the postman, who you don't know his name or her name, but they're your regular postie. You can invite them. You know, the girl at the shop that you always, you know, knows what you're going to buy before you buy it because she sees you regularly. You could ask her. You could invite, if you're a mum with toddlers, you can invite anything that moves around Christmas time. There used to be a saying in the Air Force, if it moves, salute it. If it doesn't move, paint it white. Well, anything that moves, you can invite to a carol service. With a mum with a toddler, it's like this is a passport to invite happy days, isn't it? It is. You don't have to know them. They know you. Even as a granddad around a school, holding my grand... All of a sudden, people talk to me again. I'm a granddad with a little grandson. And they go, oh, hiya, is this your grandson? Yes, my little grandson. Whereas if I'm there as an... like, are you kind of like, should you be here? You know? Should we phone the police? As soon as you've got grandkids, you're like, passport to relationships all over again. Make the most of them. And you can invite them to things that are suitable. Okay? Some people, we use a thing called Christianity Explored, seeker group thing. That's probably around here somewhere. If I invite my friends first to 5 weeks of our seeker group, that's back. So we're taking a coach load of guys to the Somme. the week after the 100th anniversary, and we're going on the 8th of July, 8th, 9th. We're taking a coachload of guys. It's a friendship builder thing. We're going on a Friday, stay overnight, Saturday morning. We will talk, we will eat, we will stand by the graves of men who gave up their lives for our freedom. And if that can't be turned into a conversation or two, and there'll be some prayers said, but it won't be a preach at them for 48 hours opportunity. But what a privilege to rub shoulders with blokes. And we're looking at a cross of sacrifice, and we're looking at all these graves, and we'll tell some stories. It's a friendship builder. Some of my mates will come to that. They won't come to church, but they go, yeah, oh, yeah, count me in. Yeah, that sounds a pretty good idea to me. You mean the church is organising it, doing it for 100 quid? Yeah, oh, fantastic, I'll come. That's a friendship builder. Some of them will come to a quiz night with a message or a supper with a message. That's a friendship with a taster. And then some of them become seekers. But generally, the numbers out here is greater than numbers in here. Some of these planes just, pew, off they go, off into the distance. But some say, tell me more. And I found that helpful as a church, just realizing that there's a journey, and it often isn't all done in one great, great leap. Let's just move on. Just also, it's a journey that it's not all about you either. I found this, again, found this illustration helpful. Somebody said, it's like links in a chain. On that morning, Paul was the last link in a long chain. We don't know all the other links in the chain. And the weird thing about being a link in a chain is you don't know if you are the first link or the link before the last link. You don't know, do you? You just have to be faithful with your bit. You may be the last link. Somebody might turn to you and say, look, you don't know this, but I've been reading the Bible for about 3 years now, and I know Jesus is the Son of God. Could you tell me how I become a Christian? You could be the last link, or you could be the first link. But what's encouraging is that God puts the links together. What did Paul say? I sow, Apollos waters. God gives the increase. And he strings these long links together, doesn't he? You look back at your own conversion. Who was the first person who told you about Jesus? They're very rarely the last person, are they? The first and the last is very rarely the same person. So, well, there was a teacher at school, I guess. I didn't know much, but I suppose actually looking back now, they're probably a Christian because they talked about God enthusiastically. Because RE, am I allowed to say this? RE for a boy, big muckabout lesson. Is that right? Well, it was in my days. It was a big muckabout lesson, except this one teacher. She was so animated when she told us Bible stories. It was like, whoa. And I remember her. She's probably a Christian. And then I went to a church Sunday school for about a month at one RAF camp. I didn't even know what church was. I didn't even know what Sunday school was. But my mum and dad says, go along to this thing. It'll get us out of your, you know, keep you busy for a couple of hours. And I remember singing a song. And it went, I am H-A-P-P-Y. I don't remember the rest of the song because I didn't know what it meant. But I'm H-A-P-P-Y. And then they went on to say I'm S-A-V-E-D. But I didn't know what that meant because I only like a 7-year-old boy. But I liked, I'm H-A-P-P-Y. And I went home and sang, I'm H-A-P-P-Y. And they go, whoa, okay. But I guess I met some Christians then. And then at school, there was a Christian union. And it was really helpful because they used to wear badges called Smile, Jesus Loves You, like we call them the God Squad. So it meant you knew who to avoid. It's great. All the Christians went around with a badge that don't talk to them. They're weirdos. Except this one guy, John, never wore the badge, but he was the real thing. And one sunny afternoon when I was 18, just about to leave school, we sat on a bench and we just got talking about life. And he didn't know. I'd been thinking a bit about, I wonder what life's all about. My dad had a stroke, nearly died. My granddad had just died. Like, what's it all about? I don't know. And we just got into that kind of conversation. Would you like to read something? And when I said yes, I wasn't saying, yeah, I'm a seeker. I just go, yeah, all right then. And he gave me a book. And the book God used to open my eyes. So what was the journey length? Well, from the teacher at school to me becoming a Christian, yeah, 10 years. And if God can do that for me, he can do that for anybody, can't he? And we're a link in a chain. And John Bugden didn't know he was nearly the last link in the chain. He had no idea. When I told him I read the book and really enjoyed it, he go, what? You can't. You're a non-Christian. You don't read books and get converted. Well, I just found it really, I believed it. And he was like, what? He never knew he was the last link in the chain. The teacher at school in Leatherhead, she never knew she was one of the first links in the chain. She didn't even know who I was. She hadn't even, she would, if you said there was a little boy somewhere in the back row, he was a very little boy because I was the second smallest boy in every school I was ever in. I was a little boy, but he was taking note of your enthusiasm about Jesus. And maybe I'll meet her in heaven one day and give her a big hug and say, you never had a clue, did you? But you were one of the first links in the chain that brought me to heaven. And I found that really encouraging again, because I don't have to deliver the whole thing every time. If I'm in a conversation with somebody and they ask me some questions, oh, I don't know. But that's okay, as I'm just faithful with a bit I've got. And when you see these links and you hear people tell their stories, you realize, what is it? Well, we're on a team. If I ask you, what's the greatest team sport in the world? Let me tell you, it's not hockey. It's the sport I play. It's not hockey. Okay? Because you can... It's rugby, unfortunately. Why is rugby the greatest team sport in the world? Why? Because you need the short and the tall and the fat and the thin. And you don't need that for any other sport, do you? In rugby, you do need all shapes and sizes. It's no good if everybody is 6'8" and 23 stone, because there will still not be a team which has got little guys like me who can run fast away from them, because we're terrified. But you see, rugby, you get a bit of everything because you need everybody on the game. And that's like a church. I'm not in it on my own. And when I listen to people's stories, I realize God has been on it and he's been putting different people across my non-Christian friends' paths as well as me. So although I'm the only Christian in the world praying for these people how pious, actually, oh, I know a friend at school, or I got a bloke at work. Or I met a Christian, one of my mates 25 years ago became a Christian at a Billy Graham rally, and I just wonder what on earth happened to him, and it's always made me think. You realize that God is on it and he's using us. And that again, doesn't that take the pressure off? So it's not my job to do the whole thing. I can just be who I am with the personality I've got, with the opportunities God gives me, and I realize I'm on a team. And it's great when I'm on a team. I love playing team sport. In one sense, we cover one another's weaknesses, don't we? We help one another when we feel down, somebody else is up. When I'm up, somebody else is down. We just encourage each other. And as I said earlier, when we're praying for one another's friends, it doesn't feel quite as lonely that my 83-year-old mum is being prayed for by a whole ton of Christians now. Isn't that encouraging? And that's what really, like... Why doesn't anybody tell you that? When you read these evangelism books, which I read one, it's a really good book actually, Paul Williams' Intention, it's a really good book. But he never mentions us. He mentions you personally, answering people's questions. And it's a good book. But why could he have not said, and we're on this together? And often what you'll find is, as we work this out together, and we share together, and talk together, and pray together, you go, I know that bloke. He lives down my road. And I know his wife. And she's talked to my wife about some of this stuff, about God. And she's asking questions. And she's scared witless to tell him. And you mean you telling me he's asking those questions too? And they don't talk together. No, they're husband and wife. They don't talk together. You see, oh, wow. We're on it together. That's what you find all the time. It's a wonderful, wonderful encouragement to know I'm a link in a chain, and I'm on it with others. So let's stop there for a moment. Just any comments, any questions about some of that journey time, being on the same team? Anything any of you want to add to that? Yeah.
Can I ask a question? You were talking about those at the back of the stand. Yeah.
No, I think what we've tried to do is we encourage Christians to really lovingly rub shoulders with non-Christians. So it could be at work. A lot of us know people at work, but obviously work's a difficult one because we go to work and they go to work, and they might as well, they could live in Brighton. Several of our guys and girls commute from Bedford to London, and you could meet people at work who live another 50 miles, 100 miles away from you. So, but work is a good place. Literature can come in there, and some good books around. But I think what we try and encourage people to do, especially where you have some kind of personal choice about intentionally using your leisure time. Now, let me give you an illustration. This is just personal, but, you know, you can see the principle. Up my loft, I have a boxed-up model railway. I would love to make a model railway up my loft. And now that I've got 6 grandkids, that's a really good excuse to spend a bit of money on a model railway up the loft one day. But if I did that, I wouldn't have time to spend playing sport. Now, I play sport badly. Look at me. I'm nearly 60. You should see the rest of the team. I'm the youth policy. You know, I mean, some of these guys, the hockey sticks turned up the other way around. And they really do hobble. We get beat badly and all the rest of it. But I've been playing with these guys for 20 years. I choose to use up my discretionary time to mix with people. And over the years, you know, they know I pray for them. We've talked at times. Some of them have come along to things. And it's almost like it's an intentional thing. Use what spare time you've got, at least try and involve non-Christians if you can, if it's permissible. Hockey is not a big drinking culture. It's a quick half pint, or nobody bothers if you have a Coke. I mean, it's not a drink culture, but it is a friendship thing. And I've chosen to use my 3 or 4 hours spare time doing that rather than on my own up the loft, okay? Now, the principle is you only have one life, invest it wisely. Invest it in relationships. So that's what I do personally. And what we try and do as a church is, can we organise some events which you can invite your circle of acquaintances to? So you're marrying what you like, a bottom-up strategy. You, as Christians, need to rub shoulders with non-Christians in love and spend some time with them, talk to your neighbours over the garden fence, that sort of stuff. And then can we organise some events as a church which I can invite my mates too. Now, so for my wife today, she, in her discretionary time, 5 or 6, 7 years ago, she saw some people out rowing. And I said, oh, they're our age. Like, they're our age. They're rowing. Look, we're still alive. Look, we can row. And the man said, there was a man on the side. He said, well, are you interested? And she said, oh, I might be. So she went along and she spends 3 hours a week meeting our age who do recreational rowing. Now today she's on an event. Our church has organised 15 or 20 women of going canoeing down Bedford River for all afternoon. Now she's invited the people she's met in her discretionary rowing time to this church event. There won't be a gospel message, it's a friendship builder. But those people will then, they've come to a friendship build. Then we might say, now we've got a sports quiz coming up with an invited speaker. Would you like to come? And some of those people will make the next step. And some of them might make the step after that. So what we're trying to do is encourage ordinary Christians to keep building on acquaintances. And then organise some things that you can invite them to. Now, what you invite them to, you need a bit of wisdom. As I say, carol services is an absolute easy win because I have Muslim Pakistani neighbours. They don't mind being invited to Christmas carols. They'll say no, but thank you for asking. See? Nobody in our culture is appalled if you ask them to a carol service. They might say no because it clashes with Sports Personality of the Year. Oh, what a dreadful programme. It's always on a Sunday night in the middle of a carol service. But if they say no because I'm watching the Sports Personality of the Year, I don't go, oh, how pagan you are. I go, okay, fine. But anyway, you'd be very welcome another time. Carol service is an easy invite. But then we might have other invites. Some of them are just friendship. Some of them are friendship with a taster, a real kind of bite into that one. And in a year, we try and organise enough of these different kinds of events. Some of them are men only. Some of them are women only. Some of them are mixed. Some of them are active, like canoeing will appeal to activish type women. the Somme trip is basically a middle-aged guy and above. You know, we're not going to get many 18-year-olds who go, I can't wait to see all those battlefield graves, you know, are you? But my age and above, this is my grandfather's I want to go and see where my grandfather's... A whole load of us, millions of us in this country go, that's my grandfather's generation. I want to at least pay my respects, you know? So you kind of middle-aged men and above thing. So when you put those two things together, you can then connect my circle of friends with some kind of event the church puts on. Doesn't have to be big numbers. Sometimes, you know, we don't have to have hundreds of people for it to be a success. There are only 15 women going to the 15 or 20 going to this canoe event tonight, this afternoon. It's not a huge event, but it's just for those women a significant event. Does that help a little bit? And then for some of those people, that will be the first contact they have with, you know, you Christians are okay. You know, I enjoyed that. So when I come to a carol service, oh, I met that woman on the canoeing 3-4, you know, 6 months ago. Or I met that bloke on the Somme trip. Oh, right, okay. Oh, actually, you also work in my factory. I didn't know you worked in my factory. And you're a Christian, you go to this church. Those connections begin to happen. Any other comments? Long answer, sorry, yeah. Yeah.
How close
they are
to the front line. What advice do you offer on gauging?
Yeah, it's a difficult one. I mean, I think it's like it's one of those things. Pray like mad and be more bold than you would naturally be. It's one of those things. It feels at times like, you know, if you get someone to something, if you leave them there, you will eventually lose them anyway. If you push them too hard, you could lose them as well. So you feel like, oh, it's a, like no win. But sometimes you find, you often find in the New Testament knows our biggest problem is fear. So the great prayers in the New Testament is give us boldness. More courage than is naturally mine. Just invite them a little bit further than, you know. And sometimes you're surprised. Oh, yeah, I'll come to that. Really? All right, you shouldn't be at that stage yet, you know. But he might be, because something may have gone on in the past you never know about. So we try and say to people, well, use wisdom. You pray for wisdom. Start with a friendship builder. But some people actually are quite happy to move a bit faster than that. Surprising number of people, if you ask them to church, we'll say yes. So we try and work around some of our special days. So we make a lot of Remembrance Sunday. We never used to. We always think, oh, that's militaristic and it's worldly. But we realize that actually we can get a lot of people to Remembrance Sunday. And if you can't talk about something about sacrifice and the ultimate sacrifice, I mean, as a preacher, it's a gift, isn't it? You know, it's a gift, really. There's some fantastic stories. And we say, oh, we've got Remembrance Sunday. Would you like to come? It's one of those cultural things that's quite, you know, you don't have to do all the saluting and all that, but you can still have a Remembrance Sunday. Thank God for the sacrifice of lives that have given us freedom. And thank God for the ultimate sacrifice given us greater freedom. So we kind of work some Sundays very specially like that. And I don't think we ever need to be too embarrassed about inviting anybody to a normal Sunday, if I can put it like that. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. No, basically we do what we do. We use a principle at home. We call it the as-if principle. What does that mean? We do everything as if we're being overheard by outsiders. So the meeting is the people of God have come to worship God. But we speak as if it's full of all kinds of people. So we would always start a service saying, really warm welcome. Well, we sing a hymn and then we do our opening then. Really warm welcome. My name is Ray. I'm part of the leadership team here. Now, 95% of people could scream out, we know you're Ray, you've been here years, we don't need to be told again. But we do it for the sake of the people. We assume that let's assume the new people are going to come. So I'm Ray. I'm leading the service today. And later on, one of our other church leaders is Bill. He's going to be explaining the Bible to us. And we speak the whole service through as if we assume the place is full of brand new people who are not yet Christians. So none of that in-house. And Tuesday B has been moved to Bill and Sue's. And you all know who Bill and Sue's are. Bill, and you're like, that is in-house speak. And you know when you go to somewhere where it's in-house, you just, oh, I don't belong. So we don't want people to be offended by anything other than the message of the cross. And so we try and give out notices that only make sense to people, all of us. We would not use language like, you know, those terrible people out there called, and then fill in your blank. I don't know, vote in, vote out, whoever your baddie person is. We don't use that language. We just look, they're in here. Everybody is in here. Let's assume that. We work as if. So when we run a special service, you wouldn't notice a great change because we do that all the time. So we'll give out our song. So we're now going to sing a great song. It was written a couple of hundred years ago and Christians have been singing it and really thanking God. And it's just so lovely that we today can still sing the same things they believe. That's how we might give out a traditional hymn or a new song. Say, this is a new song written by Christians recently because people are still discovering the vibrant love of God. We're going to sing some words that were only written last year. That's how we might give a new song, you see. You can say it in a way that just helps a person who doesn't know how to navigate. So we won't say, and the Bible reading is, we'll say the Bible reading is on page such and such of the Blue Church Bibles. And it's written to a group of Christians that lived in a town called Colossae. It's why it's called Colossians. I know it sounds a bit weird, but it's just the name of their town. I guess Bedford sounds weird to somebody from somewhere else. You know, that kind of thing. You don't do the same thing all the time. You don't want to become formulaic, but you can speak that's accessible. You would not believe how in jargon we are. We are unbelievably in jargon. And you only know it when you go somewhere else where they're in jargony. I play golf really, really badly. And my friend John plays, he's a member of a club, and he took me along to his club. And all of a sudden, I felt incredibly self-conscious. There were people looking at me, you don't belong here. I hit the first ball out of bounds, and I could hear people behind me, oh, tut, tut. You know, and then they said, so is it a £5 a hole? And I go, £5 a hole? I could, it's cost me a fortune, you know. And it was all these rules that I never knew were there. Like, so you put your shoes in a proper locker. Oh, right, I didn't know that. There's all these rules, and all of a sudden you could sense, and I felt incredibly uncomfortable. I thought, I wonder if that house church is for people who come. I bet it is. They don't know, do I stand, do I sit, do I bow, do I scrape? Is somebody going to come and do something weird to me? You know, and you think, look, so we do our level best to give people a warm welcome. And if you speak as if they are there, two things are going to happen. One is the Christians feel more confident that if I bring my friends, they are not going to be freaked out by anything geeky. Because that is a big fear. If you spend 10 years getting to know your hockey mates and you bring them along to church, you think, oh no, if they see our church in action. Then the second thing, you'll find God will honour that and they in time will be there. They will in time be there. So now back at Grace, we would see new people every single Sunday at all our services. The new people just walk, I don't know how they find us. But now the church is geared up. And we say to people, if you're sitting next to somebody you don't know, say hello, nice to meet you. Is this your first time here or you just started coming recently? Can I help you in any way? And people are beginning to realize, oh, wow. So you know how Paul talked to the Corinthians? If you're all babbling away in tongues, they'll say you're mad. Whereas if you say something intelligible, they'll go, oh, God is amongst you. So be accessible. It's not about pandering to people. It's not about being driven by their agenda. We are the people of God. We are worshipping God. But we're speaking in a way that's being overheard. Now, we don't tone down our content. We work through books of the Bible. We work through difficult sections of every book of the Bible. We were halfway through the Sermon on the Mount. Last week we had the law and the prophets and adultery and murder. And, you know, and it's a kind of thing that a non-Christian would go, ooh. But we speak as if you're over. Now, you might be overhearing this and thinking, well, I never knew that God's law looked in my heart. See, do you mean that kind of stuff? So you wouldn't notice much of a change, except on Remembrance Sunday, most of the guys will put on a tie and some of them will put on a jacket because that's about the only thing you know. The actual service would be pretty similar to a normal service. We do have a 2-minute silence just because that's traditional. And we thought, well, okay, people expecting that at 11 o'clock. The funny thing is, if you're leading that service, it's an absolute nightmare because everybody's looking at their clock. And they're going, you're early, or you're late. So actually the 11 o'clock silence as a leader of a service is an absolute hate it. But I mean, that's trivia, isn't it? But we do that. Everybody stands up and we have a 2-minute silence. We hear the babies crying, but that's okay. Yeah. Yeah.
You wouldn't think you're that far out, but you're starting our descent.
Yeah.
And that sort of bold vision, the church we led at Weymouth, we advertised in the local paper that we would do a Remembrance Sunday service with 11 o'clock silence.
Yeah.
2 o'clock, 11 o'clock. And a gentleman turned up wearing his regimental blazer and his medals.
Yeah.
He was an ex-guardsman. And it is a nightmare. You watching your clock.
Yeah. Yeah.
And he used to attend the formal seaside promenade.
Yeah.
Parade, but he started collapsing because of his age.
Mm.
And a guardsman does not collapse on parade.
Mm.
He came every Sunday because of that.
Yeah.
And about a year later, at the end of one of the services, we've been preaching about trust in Jesus, and he said to me, "You know what, Pastor?" He said, "I've come to the conclusion that anybody that puts their trust in Jesus will not have that trust abused."
Mm.
And that was from an advert in the paper.
Wow, yeah, yeah. Okay. We got 5 minutes. We're going to finish. On your sheets here, we won't worry about this. I've already commented on Colossians 4. Just go home and read that. Just isn't it interesting that the order? Devote yourselves to prayer. Make the most of your opportunities. But it starts with God and with passion. It doesn't just say pray. It says devote yourselves. And I've tried to stir that up in my own heart. I know the passion thing goes down quite quick, doesn't it? We need to keep stirring our hearts towards passion. Stir your hearts to keep remembering how lost people are. And we try and do that in our groups. Every now and then we get all the guys together and just pray for guys for an hour and a half. Or we get all the girls together and do the same. And we have a guys' prayer meeting every now and then. And some in our home groups, you constantly need to stoke passion up. Devote yourselves to prayer. And God doesn't normally get a church praying for people to be saved just for fun, does he? He doesn't say, "Oh, would it be good to get all those Christians wasting years of their life praying for lost people to be saved?" No, when he normally gets a church praying, it means he's going to answer those prayers. And it may not be today. It might be a 10-year journey. But I don't meet many churches that are praying for lost people to be saved without them seeing people being saved. And I think that's a huge encouragement to us. Then Acts 16, just very briefly, you can see it here in your notes. Just make the most of invite opportunities. You say, go crazy at Christmas. Don't restrict what you think God might do. Christmas in London, you know this, the numbers of people going to church at Christmas goes up by a million. A million people go to church at a carol service in London that don't go to church normally. Well, why can't some of that million be part of the people you invite? People incredibly open to and you just need, but it has to be a personal invite. Because otherwise the Anglicans win because they've got nice buildings, basically. Because people want to go something like nice buildingy. But if you give them a personal invite, they go, "Thank you so much." And we now go, we have 2 carols for kids. We have an open air in the carols in the park. We have 2 community carol services and Christmas Day. we probably see about 1,500 people come to church who don't come to church at Christmas now. And that's taken time. And they don't all come back the next week, but I've seen people make those journeys. I've seen people, I came to a carol service 10 years ago, and now I'm saved. But that's 10 years. And then love in action. Don't play that down. What you can do personally, what you can do as an individual. And then that final one there, make the most of opportunities. In a conversation, you sometimes have to make a split-second decision. Do I take a courageous way in or a cowardly way out? I have taken a cowardly way out many a time. I know I have. I could have said something, but I chose not to. And I thought, oh, no, it's not the right time. It's not the fitting time. And oh, if there's only one bloke rather than the three that there are, oh, I'd have said something. Oh, no, well, it's not. And I don't know. But I know this, when I've taken the courageous way in, often I find the conversation's gone a lot, the Holy Spirit's blown into the sails. It went, oh, my goodness, you know, an hour and a half late, we're still talking about Jesus. Now, I know you can be a blustering around and blundering around and bullish, but that's not most of us, is it? Most of us are not that wired. Most of us are Brits, we're shy, we're reserved. We'd rather, you know, just keep quiet. Pray for boldness. I thank God for John Bugden. He could have just talked about the weather and the exams that were coming up and what unis were going to, but he didn't. He talked to me about life. And here I am now. Isn't it scary that in one sense my whole eternity hang on a Christian taking a courageous way in when I know I've taken cowardly ways out? What if it had been roles reversed? Poor John Bugden would have been unsaved, I think, because cowardly Ray Evans would have just kept his head down, kept quiet. Just pray for grace in that zone. It may be ask a question. Why do you say that? Or, oh, tell me what's going on. It doesn't have to be sit here while I tell you everything. It could just get, you know, be a good listener. Ask questions. Say to somebody, could I pray for you? Those are the ways in. It doesn't have to be blunderbuss. But make the most, because as I listen to people's stories, and I've heard lots now over the years, I just see, oh, I thank God for that Christian that was a little bit more courageous than they would have naturally have been. And that's why we can pray. And the great conclusion is you can leave the results with God. You can just leave the results with God. He does not call us, you know, to impress him with our sales record. He just says, trust me. I use people like you to build my kingdom. And when I wrote my little book called Ready, Steady, Grow, one of my friends, Phil, he's a minister down in Brighton, he wrote like a foreword for it. And this is how he said. He said, if God can do this with Ray in Bedford, he can do it with anybody anywhere. See? And that I'm so glad he wrote that, because that's basically it. You see, it's not we've got the answer, you lot listen. It's like if God can do it with us in Bedford, he most certainly can do it with you here in Twickenham. He really can. He can grow his church. And just be encouraged with that. Just be encouraged with that. So that in that sense, the thing doesn't become about a fearful duty. It becomes about being on a team that puts people in heaven. Final story, I've used it many a time. There was a man who cleaned the toilets, and the President of the United States said, what do you do for a living? And he said, I'm part of a team that puts a man on the moon, because he cleaned the toilets at NASA. See? What are you? I'm part of a team that puts people in heaven. Every single one of us. I help make lovely coffee, by the way, nice donuts and stuff. You know, I'm part of a team that puts people in heaven. I greet people on the door. I teach their kids. I sweep the floors. I'm part of a team that puts people in heaven. And we need that spirit, don't we? Because we can get so discouraged, so isolated, so like I'm useless. No, I'm part of a team that puts people in heaven. Let me close in prayer. Father in heaven, I'm so grateful for the time my brothers and sisters have given me this morning. Pray they would be encouraged. Pray they would have fresh hearts and new ideas maybe. Perhaps a resolve to start praying for someone maybe they've given up on. May they know the Holy Spirit is alive and well and at work here in dark Europe. And may the Holy Spirit encourage us all to know that as we hold out the word of life, we're shining like stars in a dark universe. But God's light can shine into the darkest place. It can shine into a human heart. And the glory of God in the face of Christ can shine there and bring eternal life. May you encourage this church and every church represented here today. We thank you for one another. We thank you for the gospel. May your kindness be on us now for Jesus' sake. Amen. Amen.